Let's return to This Week in America. Here's your host, Rick Bratton.
Welcome back, everybody. Coast to Coast, This Week in America. Thank you for joining us. Before and after Israel's 9/11, aftermath of the October 7th catastrophe and Rays of Hope by Helen Birnbaum, you'll find a timely narrative that chronicles the amicable bridges between Jews and Muslims that existed before the October 7th disaster and the connections that continue to grow since this date. The repercussions and revelations of October 7th are discussed in the book, but the main focus is the rapport between Jews and Muslims, two peoples who are traditionally perceived as enemies. Amidst the tragedies of war, Helen uncovered benevolent events that were bringing people together across the religious chasm. Thus, the good news narrative continued, highlighting the sparks of hope manifesting as Muslims and others coming forth and speaking up for Israel. Helen was born and bred in South Africa, studied biology, was a lecturer and researcher at the University of Johannesburg before moving to Israel, working for 20 years in the chemical industry, specializing in the safe handling and use of pesticides and other hazardous chemicals. Her first book, Healthy Body, Peaceful Mind, Awakening Spirit, focuses on holistic healing techniques and our need to recognize and honor the body-mind-spirit continuum that makes us the human being. And from Israel, our guest on This Week in America, Helen Birnbaum, author of Before and After Israel's 9/11, Aftermath of the October 7th Catastrophe, and Rays of Hope. Helen, welcome to the program. It's a pleasure to have you with us.
Hello, Rick. Thank you for having me.
It is our
pleasure. I'm very happy to be on your radio show.
Our pleasure, and she is coming, as I mentioned, from Israel. She has great insight into what is happening over there, what has happened, and the relationship between people, and we'll talk about that on the program today. How would you describe, and I touched on it briefly in the open, this, the situation in Israel and Gaza before October 7th? What was it like there?
Well, there was an uneasy calm. You can say the conflict was on a back burner. There were endless cross-border clashes. Palestinians that recently were burning agricultural fields in Israel, and rockets targeted towns near the borders. So there was continuous provocation that we had gotten used to. At the same time, Palestinians crossed the border daily from Gaza to work in Israel, where they earned much more than in the Strip. They had to go through checkpoints and were searched for weapons, which is not pleasant. It is part of the idea of the occupation that Israel was in many ways in control of Gaza. But I want to point out that Gaza was hardly the refugee camp most people imagine it to be. Gaza City itself was a huge built-up city. The number of schools was 183. There were 35 hospitals. There were 7 universities and colleges spread over 16 campuses. Gaza received billions of dollars in international aid. It could have developed into a thriving country next to Israel. But Hamas was not interested in a country next to Israel. Hamas wanted all of Israel and has said this over and over again. In Israel at the time, this is before October 7th, the society was in upheaval. Israeli society was severely divided over proposed reforms put forward by the government to dramatically curb the independence of the courts and justice system. The changes they wanted would give the government more power, and citizens protested such a change. Hundreds of thousands of people took to the streets every week for months. They feared the changes would be the end of democracy in Israel. But the government refused to budge, confirming the fear that Israel might become a dictatorship. So we had the Palestinians in Gaza, who were not totally free, ruled by a very tough and harsh Hamas government. And we had Israel, which was divided, with a large part of the population protesting against the changes that the government wanted to enforce. So that was the situation before October 7.
Sort of a different look than what we see over here, the fact the government wanted more power. Vaguely remember seeing stories like that on the news, but when you talk about Gaza, a different perception than I think most of us in America have. That was the before part, before 9/11, their 9/11 in Israel. Let me, before we talk about what happened after that, why did you decide to write this book? This is not a political book. It's a book of people and people trying to get together and some successes in being able to do that. Why did you decide to sit and write this book before and after Israel's 9/11?
Yeah, I started writing this book before October 7th with the aim of bringing attention to the possibility of peaceful coexistence between Jews and non-Jews. There was a lot of evidence of bridges being built across the religious and cultural divisions, both in Israel and abroad. So before October 7th, there was a growing buzz of activity by individuals and groups reaching out to those who were traditionally perceived as enemies. They reached out in areas such as religion, education, business, sports, and on the personal level, on a one-to-one level. So this good news that was happening all around us went mostly unnoticed in the media. The hostility and conflict between Israel and Palestinians grabbed the headlines, confirming the adage about journalism that if it bleeds, it leads.
Yes.
At the same time, the Abraham Accords were in full swing. The prospect of peace in the region was good, and the road to economic cooperation was opening. There were plans to share technological know-how, and everybody would benefit. Even Saudi Arabia was softening its stern attitude towards Israel, and there was talk of it joining the Accords. Then the massacre on October 7, 2023 happened. Hamas terrorists not only killed 1,200 Israeli civilians and took 240 hostages, but they killed people's belief in the possibility of achieving coexistence and peace. Those attacks triggered a sense of betrayal and loss of trust in our Palestinian neighbors. Life in Israel changed forever, and the need to eliminate the terrorists and return the hostages took center stage in our lives.
Was Israel... Oh, I'm sorry, finish that thought, please.
Go ahead. Okay, the brutality of those attacks against innocent Israeli civilians shocked the world, but very quickly, international attitudes towards Israel changed for the worse. Anti-Israel protests burst out across Western countries, and anti-Semitism peaked. Not only had unarmed Israeli citizens been brutally attacked in their own homes, but the world turned against us when we defended ourselves. It was incomprehensible. Had the goodwill that existed before October 7 been in vain? So that's what caused me to write the book. I started before October 7, seeing all the good news. Then we had October 7, a tragedy. And then other things happened, which I will talk about in the book. But at this point, I want to point out that the book does not discuss all the complexities of the Palestinian-Israeli conflict pre-October 7 or post-October 7. The unexpected Hamas massacre and hostage-taking of Israeli civilians triggered an Israeli military incursion into the Gaza Strip. And this war has many ramifications, which are not discussed in the book. Of course, a major concern is the fate of the remaining hostages. They are in our thoughts all the time. Of importance to me is the support coming from Western countries and from the Muslim community, both local and worldwide. Amid virulent anti-Israel sentiments, many people have chosen to speak up for Israel. Some of them actually risk their lives by doing this. And their testimonies are the focus of this book.
The book is Before and After Israel's 9/11, Aftermath of the October 7th Catastrophe, and Rays of Hope by Helen Birnbaum, our guest on the program. That's Birnbaum. Book is available wherever books are sold. Go to our website and you'll find the link to the Amazon site. Be able to get information and order the book there as well. Let's go back to October 7th, and you, as just an average citizen, suddenly this is unfolding in front of your eyes. Why was the Israeli military unprepared for the attacks, or were they?
Yes. At this point in time, in 2023 and even in 2022, Israel believed that Hamas was more interested in developing the Gaza Strip than fighting Israel. After all, millions of dollars were pouring into the Gaza Strip from international aid, from Qatar, and from the Muslim Brotherhood. The Israeli government was providing economic incentives, believing that a healthy economy would bring stability to the Strip. The government thought that alternatives to violence were the best way for keeping the peace. For instance, there were projects being planned for Gaza, building a desalination plant, building a new power station, improving the infrastructure, connecting Gaza to the East Mediterranean Gas Company. And all of these would have improved Palestinian lives and living conditions. It was hoped that the economic benefits for the residents of the Strip would lead them to understand how much they stood to gain if Hamas stopped its violence against Israel. Now, there was a narrow strip of land on the Gaza side of the border that was kept barren. It was empty for security reasons. Toward October 7th, quite a lot of activity was noticed to be taking place on the barren strip next to the border. This unusual activity was reported to the army hierarchy, but it was ignored. On October 7th, the terrorists inactivated the security alarm system on the fence, so the soldiers at the lookout post did not detect the invasion across the border. Soldiers stationed at bases in the south were taken by surprise. Some were killed, others were taken hostage by the Palestinians. So Israel was caught off guard completely, a result of having been hoodwinked by Hamas. We thought Hamas was more interested in developing the Strip than in fighting Israel, but that was a bluff. They were actually preparing for war.
What were the immediate repercussions following the October 7th attack? What happened afterwards?
Of course, all of Israel went into a state of shock. We suddenly found ourselves in a reality we could not have imagined. Everything changed, not only in the border communities, but in the whole country. It turned out that Palestinians who worked on the farms in the Israeli border communities had made maps of the area, which they gave to Hamas, together with other information about the kibbutzim, the farms, and the businesses. This information was used to plan the attacks. We know this because these maps and other details were found on the terrorists who were captured or killed during the fighting. One of the consequences of the massacre was the loss of trust and faith suffered by people who had spent their time and energy helping Palestinians in various ways. Some people helped Palestinians to get job training or ensure that they were paid fairly. Some people volunteered to drive sick Palestinians from the border checkpoints to hospitals in Israel. Many of these volunteers were murdered on October 7. The attacks were brutal. The mobs that crossed the border and crossed the border in all kinds of vehicles, pickup trucks, bicycles, motorbikes, on foot, and some even flew in on hang gliders. They really went wild. They mutilated bodies, raped, beheaded, and burnt people alive. They burnt people in their homes. I don't want to go into further details, but there are videos of the massacre taken by the terrorists themselves using body cameras and mobile phones, and these were posted immediately on October 7th. At the same time, missiles were being fired from Gaza into Israel. Needless to say, the cruelty triggered a vicious war in Gaza. But discussions about the Israel-Gaza war itself are beyond the scope of this book. Yes, it has become a long, tragic story.
And there were revelations as well, important revelations that came to light. What were some of those?
Yeah, there were three major revelations. One of them was the size of the underground tunnel system that extends throughout the Gaza Strip. We knew there were tunnels that crossed the border between the Strip and Israel, also from Egypt, but the sheer size of the system is astounding. Hamas claims it stretches 500 kilometers. If so, it is larger than the London Underground subway. There are many levels to the tunnels. Some are big enough to accommodate large motorized vehicles. The tunnels are used for smuggling weapons and raw materials from Egypt, storing huge quantities of ammunition and providing protection for the senior Hamas terrorists. The tunnels open out into schools, mosques, hospitals, and other public facilities. These locations also serve as rocket launching sites, which means that they are situated in populated areas. Israel does not want to harm civilians. It gains no benefit from that. But civilians are used by Hamas as human shields.
Yes.
Unfortunately, Hamas welcomes high numbers of civilian casualties as this brings them international support. There's a quotation by Douglas Faith from the Hudson Institute that I'd like to quote.
Yes.
He says, it is unprecedented for a party to a conflict to adopt a strategy that maximizes civilian deaths on its own side. So, apart from the underground tunnel system, another revelation that came to light and had been largely ignored because we did know about it, it was the education system in Gaza. At school, children were taught to hate Jews and to hate Israel. This is clearly illustrated in their school books and also told by former Palestinian residents of the Strip who described their experiences at school. They were taught that the highest calling in life is to murder Jews and take all their land. They would shout at school, death to Jews, death to America. The other revelation, which is quite important, and it's a fact that was known, but it received very little attention, was the Hamas Charter or Covenant, which calls for the destruction of Israel. Hamas does not want to have a country next to Israel. They want to have all of Israel. And those are the three revelations that quite important.
Well, and they are significant, aren't they? They make a major impact on what's happening and the perception of the people as to what's happening. Those were significant revelations in the underground tunnel and all of that. It's just fascinating to hear from Israel what has happened. Some stories we get here in the U.S., other stories we do not. Our guest is Helen Birnbaum, Birnbaum. The book is Before and After Israel's 9/11, Aftermath of the October 7th Catastrophe and Rays of Hope. Boy, time is going by so quickly. It's such an amazing story that you tell, and the book's available wherever books are sold here in the U.S., Amazon, Barnes & Noble. We've got the Amazon link on our website, thisweekinamerica.us. I think, Helen, as we're listening here, should the West be worried? Should the U.S. be worried?
Well, many prominent people, both Muslims and non-Muslims, are warning Europe and America that if Israel falls, they will be next. They say Israel is just the beginning. There is a chapter in my book titled A Wake-Up Call for the West that echoes this concept. There's another chapter titled Israel, the Canary in the Coal Mine, which also contains warnings to the West. I would like to quote the Foreign Minister of the United Arab Emirates, Sheikh Abdullah bin Zayed Al Nahyan. In 2017, he posted a video clip in which he warned against the failure of Western countries to address and act against extremists who migrated from the Middle East. He warned that certain countries could become hotbeds of terrorism in Europe and elsewhere. Sheikh Abdullah bin Zayed reposted the same video in June 2024, after October 7. He reposted it during widespread pro-Palestinian demonstrations and student protests with the caption, "I told you so." There are many other people posting on social media about the recent expansion of radical Islam. Some of them point out that not all Muslims are Islamists. They don't all hate the host society, and they certainly oppose terrorism. My book describes and explains certain things about radical Islam. It explains about Sharia law and jihad. It describes the Muslim Brotherhood, which is the parent organization of Hamas and is alive and well in America. The Muslim Brotherhood is listed as a terrorist group in Egypt, Bahrain, Saudi Arabia, Syria, the UAE, and Russia. There is a French imam who is an outspoken critic of radical Islam. He says that if it weren't for the Muslim Brotherhood, all Muslims would be brothers. So there are many people who are warning the West. There are many Muslims who do not agree with the violence perpetrated by radical Islam.
Well, this book is a must-read and an eye-opener for many of us. The book is Before and After Israel's 9/11, book available wherever books are sold. A couple of minutes left with Helen Birnbaum, our guest on the program, coming to us by phone from Israel. Have the Muslim voices had their say, or do they continue to speak up?
Well, social media is full of Muslims and some ex-Muslims who reject violence and extremism and are speaking up for moderate Islam, which in their view is the true Islam. And I have to say that they have not had this say. They continue to speak up every day. I mean, I keep seeing new posts, new people speaking up and rejecting the violence of radical Islam.
Time has gone by so quickly. It's been a fascinating conversation, enlightening. The book gives you much more. Helen, is there a particular take-home message that you'd like to leave with? We've talked about so much, and there's so much more that we haven't talked about that you write about in your book. What's the takeaway? What do you hope that people listening here, especially in the U.S., to this story, what do you hope the takeaway is?
I'd like to say that Israel does not stand alone. I'd like to leave you with a quotation by the president of the World Jewish Congress, Ronald Lauder. He says, "A quiet revolution is taking place in the Arab world. The new tolerance towards Jews embraces our mutual heritage." This may sound like a pipe dream and is the opposite to what Islamists believe, namely that there is no place for Jews, not in the Middle East or anywhere else. But the reality is that such a belief does not come from the Quran. It is found in some of the hadiths, which are commentaries written by individuals after the Quran was completed. Of course, they are subject to interpretation of the people who write them. My book has a chapter titled Understanding Islam, where I quote some verses from the Quran that calls Jews the people of the book and children of Israel. In fact, the phrase children of Israel in Arabic, Bani Israel, occurs 43 times in the Quran. Moderate Muslims say that the Jews are part of and belong in this region. Then to me, that's a very positive.
Yes.
And enlightening message.
Well, there was so much here. We just touched the surface. The book, as I say, is a must read. Before and after Israel's 9/11, aftermath of the October 7th catastrophe, and Rays of Hope by Helen Birnbaum, our guest on the program. I thank you, our Link, Print, and Media, for arranging our call today with Helen to talk about the book. You are Link, Print, and Media, marketing platforms that are completely customizable to your needs, and we thank them. Helen, it's been a pleasure having you on the program, talking about this, encouraging what was happening before October 7th. Hopefully we can get back to that level. Thank you for being with us.
Thank you, Rick, for having me on your program.
It has been our pleasure. Helen Birnbaum, Bye. Before and after Israel's 9/11. You're listening to This Week in America, and we're back after these messages.
You're listening to This Week in America with Rick Bratton. More after this.